Welcome to Extreme Jeans on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Hello, Jeanies, and welcome back to Extreme Jeans Family History Radio. It is Fisher here, your radio root sleuth. A couple of our guests this week were at the convention, Rick Lippert and Chris Hart from Easy Photo Scan. And these guys have created the greatest technology to help you preserve your photos in large quantities. In fact, they hosted a scanning party Friday night at Roots Tech, and you're going to want to hear what they have in store for you in 2014. That's later in the show. Also joining us in about 8 minutes, a guy I can only describe as one extreme genie. He is a man who decided to break a hole in a 400-year-old genealogical wall by organizing a group of descendants with similar interests. The effort cost thousands of dollars, covering extensive Scottish research, but the results were remarkable and are now being published in three parts. We'll be talking to Adrian Benjamin Burke of New York City. The guy's a lawyer, and honestly, I don't know how he gets any lawyering done because he's constantly on the trail. Time once again for some family histoire news from the pages of ExtremeJeans.com. MSN has a story this week about a remarkable photograph taken in North Carolina in 1908. It was by Lewis Hine, who is called the father of American documentary photography. And the photo captures a little girl of about 9 years old staring out the window of the cotton mill where she was employed. It can only be described as haunting. A second photo showed the same girl with a woman and an older girl. Now, Hine took about 500 pictures at these textile mills to document the cruel child labor conditions so many children were working under, eventually helping to establish new child protection labor laws in the 1930s. And while most of Hine's photos had names on them, these two did not. And that bothered a man named Joe Manning. Now, Joe is a historian and author and has spent several years trying to track down descendants of the people shown in the photos of this particular mill. And so far, he's found like 350 of them, which helps him to learn the stories of those in the pictures. Joe decided the best way to try to find out about these photos was to post them on his website and hope someone recognized a face. Well, when things sat quiet for a while, he decided to turn to the 1910 census and find the names of girls from the area born about 1898 with a sister about 2 years older and a mother in the household. Well, he came up with a dozen and posted them with pictures and waited again. Well, about 2 months later, Carol Cook of Louisville, Kentucky, a family history genie of 4 years, went searching for her ancestors, and she found her grandmother's name on Joe's website, Lalar Blanton. Well, she looked at the photos and emailed Joe that she thought that the girl might, in fact, be her grandmother. A facial recognition expert compared later-in-life pictures from Carol and confirmed it was indeed the little girl. Well, Carol had never heard of the challenges her grandmother faced as a child laborer and was thrilled to learn that the photo was historic and iconic. The mystery girl now has a name, and wouldn't we all like to come across photos like that? See them at ExtremeJeans.com. You know, it's been 50 years since the Beatles first appeared on The Ed Sullivan Show, and I mention it only because, well, for me, it's a bit of family history. My father, Billy Fisher, was the arranger for the CBS Orchestra, led by Ray Block, for the entire 23 years of The Sullivan Show, as well as when Jackie Gleason was headquartered in New York. Well, Dad wasn't much of a rock and roll fan, but knew that I was excited about this particular British group of long hairs, so he waited at rehearsal for them to show up so he could obtain their autographs for me. But unfortunately, as we all know, they were long delayed by legions of screaming fans that greeted them at the airport. They didn't make it, and so the autographs did not happen. Just 4 months later, in June of 1964, Dad arranged for my Cub Scout den to attend the Sullivan Show. He even worked it out for wagon train actor Robert Horton, whose act he had done the musical score for, to come out after the show and pose for a picture with us. But Horton apparently forgot and left, so a scrambling show staffer instead brought out Ed Sullivan himself to pose with our group. Well, we were in awe, and I have posted the picture on our website, ExtremeJeans.com. In the late 60s, Dad would often take me and my brother to the Ed Sullivan Theater for rehearsals, but that experience in 1964 was an absolute highlight. And as a follow-up, just last fall, wife Julie and I were visiting New York, and because of that family history, the staff for the David Letterman program, which now records at the Ed Sullivan Theater, kindly invited us onto the set of The Late Show. The place looked very much the same as I remembered it back in the day, with some renovations. We got to visit with Paul Schaefer, the current CBS Orchestra bandleader, and announcer Alan Coulter. And then they sat me at Letterman's desk with my wife in the guest seat for pictures. More than just a tourist thing, it was true family history nostalgia, and I was deeply grateful for the hospitality. With all the questions they asked me about the Sullivan days, I felt a little bit like a celebrity guest myself. I've also posted that picture at extremejeans.com, and I figure I'll just keep going back every 50 years. And coming up next, the ultimate extreme genie, a lawyer from New York who is so hooked on family history, he's not doing a whole lot of lawyering. We'll talk about his ruthless determination and strategy for breaking down a 400-year-old family history wall and what he found behind it. Next on Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. Welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here, and my next guest is a guy I've run into along the trail, and you talk about an extreme genie. He is a lawyer in New York City who got it in his head that he wanted to break down a 400-year-old wall because, well, it had to do with his ancestors. Adrian Benjamin Burke is on the line. Hi, Adrian. How are you?
Good, Scott. Thank you for having me.
You know, we've been exchanging emails for a long, long time. It's like the first time we've ever actually spoken.
True. It's wonderful.
And I will say right away, you are a madman when it comes to this stuff.
Well, I have been accused of being a bit obsessive about genealogy. That is true.
Let's go through this just a little bit. Your ancestry goes back to Scotland, and you and I actually share these people. And it comes to a family named Duncanson that happened to have several sisters that all married and then wound up going over to New Amsterdam. And so actually probably millions of people descend from these Duncanson sisters who married into Teller, Glenn. What were some of the other ones?
Oh, geez. The Glenn family, the Teller family, the Powell family.
Right.
And the Orchard family.
Right.
So there were actually quite a number, because the four sisters, a few of them had multiple marriages. And within, say, two generations, I haven't counted it up yet, but I'd say there were probably close to 100 great-grandchildren.
Right at that point. So right now, there are just thousands of people who descend from this family. And the original breakthrough was made in the late 90s by our friend Gordon Remington, who's been on the show several times. The story was great because he had been in an auto accident and had to recover from some injuries, couldn't do much. And he ran across some story relating to these families in New York. And he said, I wonder if I can find something on that back in Holland, which he did. And he started putting it together that these families weren't Dutch, they were Scottish. And he did a great article in the New York Genealogical and Biographical Society Record. Now, fast forward several years later, and here you come along and you say, hey, I think there's more to this story, and you picked it up from there.
Correct. It was, I think, in 2002 when I read Remington's article. And what interested me the most was that the Duncanson sisters' paternal grandfather was the personal minister to King James VI of
right.
Scotland and first of England.
And we're talking about the guy, you know, who made the King James Bible.
Yes. And this was the household minister, Reverend John Duncanson, who was the minister in the king's household beginning as early as, say, the king was, I think, 15, 16 months old at
right.
the time. He was just an infant, and he was being nursed by his wet nurse, Helen Little. And Reverend John Duncanson stayed with the king about 40 years. He didn't die until 1602, I believe. And the Duncanson sisters' mother was named Helen Livingston. And given the prominence of the Livingston family here in New York, of course, Robert Livingston is quite well known, and also in Scotland, I assumed, and I assume correctly, that this Helen Livingston came from one of the prominent Livingston families at the time.
Right. Now, you went, you went all out to find this stuff. Now, what kind of law do you do, by the way, Adrian?
I was hired by a large law firm here in New York City to translate legal records from Italian, French, and Spanish. And the past 8 years, I've been doing that and at the same time researching the Duncanson sisters' ancestry.
Right. And you got a bunch of descendants together who helped fund this thing. I mean, you guys have spent like thousands of dollars on this to break through the line and actually hired somebody over in Scotland. And you've been over there as well.
Yes, I went over there just a couple of years ago after much of the research had been done. And what was really wonderful was I started preparing for the trip many, many months in advance. And I knew I wanted to hit some of the major markers that the family's ancestors had. One of them, for example, was a church called St. Ninian's, which is in Stirling. And the Duncanson sisters' maternal grandfather was Reverend Henry Livingston of St. Ninian's. And I arranged ahead of time with the Stirling City Council to get access to the churchyard. It's now in ruins. All that remains is the church tower, and there are gravestones around it. And it's entirely closed off. So what I did was I explained to the council that I was a descendant of the Reverend Henry Livingston. I was going to be in Scotland, and I really wanted to visit the ruins of the church that he preached from. And they were very accommodating. I arrived. I got the key to the gate, went in. I was able to explore the churchyard. Many of the gravestones have skull and crossbones on them, a little bit morbid by modern standards. And I was able to basically stand where the altar would have been, and it's now just an overgrown field. And I did the same thing in Alloa, where the Duncanson sisters' father, Reverend James Duncanson, preached from the old medieval St. Mungo's Church, which is also in ruins. And I went to the castle tower of Alloa and persuaded the nice ladies who volunteer there to let me in the churchyard ruins as well. And I was able to spend about an hour just prowling around the abandoned cemetery. It was great fun.
Well, it is great fun to do that kind of thing. You sent some pictures over, too. We've got them posted on our website at extremejeans.com, and people can see this. You know, I think the thing that's important for everybody to understand, even if you're not related to these people, this process that you're going through is something that anybody can do for their ancestors and to track them down. And it is an adventure. It's almost like being in your own Hardy Boy detective novel.
It is. And I think what was really unique about this project was, as you mentioned before, I brought together four descendants of these sisters, and we pooled our money. And I took the lead in organizing the actual research. We hired a researcher in Edinburgh, Scotland. We hired a woman by the name of Diane Bapty, who is an excellent researcher in archives. And she went through unpublished manuscript materials that basically no one's ever gone through before, at least with this kind of purpose, looking for this Duncanson and Livingston family. And the results were tremendous. And then I made similar discoveries on my own from my living room just on the internet using the Google Books database. And I was able to complete two identifications of ancestors just using Google Books. But you have to know how to do it. It's not easy.
No, it's not. Although if you start doing it and playing with it, you can self-teach, I think.
That's what I did.
Right.
It came down to learning how to imagine the different spellings of these words in 16th, 17th century records. They never spelled a word the same way twice.
No, they didn't.
And it's very, Livingston was spelled Levingston, Livingstone, Livingstoon, all different combinations. And believe it or not, I was able to identify the sister's grandmother by doing just that. I typed in Helen Levingston instead of Livingston. And a document came up from a published book that was made about 150 years ago. And that was what allowed me then to identify Helen's mother. And it was just a matter of luck.
Well, really? Not luck. It's hard work.
Skill.
You make your own luck, in my mind.
Right, exactly.
And you have absolutely been doing that. And the thing I've always kind of maintained is a couple of things that come to mind. Number one is that there is no correct spelling. We think these days about, this is how my name is spelled. But there are so many reasons that it can be spelled in different ways as you go back that you can't think that way anymore when you're researching. And the other thing is that there is behind these brick walls that we have in our lineages, sometimes, like in your case, 400 years old, I guess I'd say our case, because we share this.
Of course, we're cousins.
We are. But there's a city behind that wall. And it's so fun to break through and find all the lines that go in so many different directions, including lines going back to Robert the Bruce.
Yes, yes. In fact, the Duncanson sisters descend from King Robert III of Scotland. That's their most recent ancestor. And it's interesting because Catherine Duncanson, who was the youngest of the four sisters, was actually the first to arrive in what was New Amsterdam. Now, of course, it's New York City in 1639. And she descends from King Robert III in just 9 generations, making her, I believe, the earliest immigrant to colonial America with such a short royal pedigree.
Interesting.
You understand what I'm saying.
Yes. Now, let's talk about Helen Little a little bit. You mentioned her earlier, and she was the wet nurse for King James VI, he of the King James Bible. How did she wind up in that situation? What do you know about her?
Well, she's a fascinating figure, primarily because so little is known about her. The only thing that has ever really been said about her was that she was a drunk. And that when she was nursing King James as an infant, her intoxicated breast milk caused him many illnesses and contributed to his later health issues. But in fact, my basic thesis is that that was not the case, or at least she's been misbranded, I believe. She was a very important figure in King James's life, because she stayed with him for at least 40 years. And that's not something you would expect if he blamed her for causing all of his health problems when he was nursing. And her family stayed with him as well. And this is how it comes into the Duncanson family. Helen Livingston's mother was Agnes Gray, who was the daughter of Helen Little. And so Agnes was just a child and lived in Stirling Castle with her mother and at least a couple of her sisters. And when she grew up, she married the Reverend Henry Livingston, whose family also served the Stuart family. His brothers served under Queen Mary, and again, they served with King James. And so the Duncanson sisters, their entire immediate ancestry all centers around Helen Little and the court of King James.
It's a fascinating thing. And, of course, there are many descendants, especially if you live in the New York area and you descend from those from New Amsterdam. You may have the blood of the Duncanson sisters in you through the Tellers, the Glens, the Allens, the Orchards. You can check out your line and see if you tie in. And, Adrian, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I hope you don't lose your job with all the work you're doing.
I hope not to.
Keep up the good work, and we look forward to seeing where this goes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, and coming up next, a couple of the Roots Tech stars on digitizing your ancestral photo collection. Next on Extreme Genes Family History Radio at ExtremeGenes.com. Hey, welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio, ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here, your radio root sleuth, with a couple of new friends that I met at Roots Tech, Rick Lippert and Chris Hart from Easy Photo Scan. Hi, guys. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Good. Yeah.
Hey,
thanks.
Great to see you.
These guys do some amazing things in the world of preservation. They kind of hang out with our preservation authority, Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com. And you are doing a national effort to help people understand and to give them the means to preserve massive quantities of old photographs. And I love what you do. Rick, tell us about it.
Well, actually, what we've done is we incorporate some new technology that's been out for a couple of years now to help folks move away from the flatbed scanning of their photographs and their heritage photos.
One at a time in the office.
In and
yes.
Out. Or maybe that multi-format unit that's a scanner and the fax and all that, not necessarily made to.
Not that I have one of those.
No. And do it in high quality and high speed and be able to do literally shoebox after shoebox and get that whole collection done and preserved in the right way in a high quality.
Okay, so what does the right way mean?
The right way means it's preserved in a high resolution.
Right.
And it's preserved on a media that's going to last a long time for us.
Right.
And it can be shared then for not only now, but for generations to come.
Yeah, that's the thing. And you guys have done great work. You're based in Florida.
We are.
Just a little north of Orlando.
That's right.
Beautiful area. Smart man. And but what I love, one of the things that you did during a disaster, you actually went out with your machines and helped people save their photos. After, was it a hurricane?
Well, we had some tremendous rains come through, and that brings some flooding. And the human devastation, first of all, you want to take care of that first. But then they start looking around and they go, oh, my. In the closet was my photos.
Right.
My photos.
My parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, my kids.
Exactly. And so we lent our resources and helped these folks out a little bit, and we were able to save some of these stories. And they were some amazing stories.
Well, you know, I went through a flood, nothing like what you've described, where I had tremendous damage. I mean, thousands of dollars in damage in my home, my yard, and did lose some photographs where they actually wound up sticking to the glass of the frame. And, you know, you can never peel it out again. And, you know, what do you do with things like that? But you've got the solution for stuff like that.
Yeah, we actually had a interesting case where we had a newscaster, a television newscaster, and the only photo of his mother as a child had been damaged. It had been adhered. Some material had gotten onto the photo, had gotten onto the plate glass that had been protecting it, and had gotten glued down. And he came to us and said, is there anything we could do? This is the only photo of my mother in existence as a child.
Oh.
We worked with the photo. We were able to digitize it, preserve it, restore it, and bring it back. And when we brought it back to him, it brought tears to his eyes.
Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. A TV newsman was in tears?
Yeah.
This is hard to imagine. But that you know, and that's the thing. This is about touching lives and preserving, and you guys do this so well. Where's this going in the future?
Well, you know, it's not only just individuals, but it's businesses as well. Some of our clients are businesses. In fact, Chris spent almost a year with a huge client. Maybe he'd like to tell you a story or two about that.
Love to hear that, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. Ripley Entertainment, their worldwide headquarters are down in Orlando. And they contacted us and they said, we'd like to preserve 100 years of Robert Ripley's cartoons, photographs, all the supporting documents and everything. And originally they wanted us to flatbed everything, and we said, sure, we'd love to take up about a 10-year residency with you, and we'll happily do that. But we presented them with the equipment and everything that we have right now, and we were able to, you know, talk them into letting us do it. And we were able to do 100 years worth in, like Rick said, in about a year. Which, at the end of it, come to find out, the last endeavor to do that took about 2.5 years.
Wow.
So they thought we were crazy.
But you could do it that fast.
Yeah.
And you did. So you reduced the time, I mean, by stupid amounts, 80% or
absolutely,
something.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so how many cartoons or whatever it was are we talking about here?
We're looking at, when you look at 100 years worth of Ripley's Believe It or Not cartoons, you're looking at one cartoon per day.
Yes.
And including Sundays. Yeah.
Okay.
It adds up a little bit.
Yes. 36,000 or something like that. That's insane.
It was a lot. But interestingly enough, the fact of the matter is that we rent this equipment out and have scanning parties for family reunions and folks so that you don't have to just buy this equipment.
You can use it. Because it would be very expensive,
So folks can come together and they can bring their photos. And it's not unusual for a family reunion to do 10, 15,000 photos in a weekend.
What?
Yeah.
10 to 15,000 in one weekend.
And these folks come back and they tell us these stories. And of course, we ship this equipment all over the country and they tell us the most amazing stories about how family members, distant relatives will have come together and they say, I didn't know you had this of this person. And of course, you know, any picture that you don't know who that person is kind of useless.
It's the most, yes, I have a Bible that has a bunch of old pictures not marked. No idea who they are.
And if we don't take the time now to use the technologies that are available and take the knowledge of this, the people around us, and utilize that to preserve that knowledge and record it, then it's going to be lost forever.
Now, we saw a photo face match at Roots Tech as well. Now, imagine taking some of these unmarked photos that show up through your scanning parties at these reunions, and then you start matching up known photos of these people and go, oh, wait a minute, look at this, 80% likelihood it's the same person. What a powerful tool of technology that is to go with what you do.
And there's other technologies like you saw in our booth where we now have the QR codes where you can add additional information, where you can actually record the person's voice and add it to the picture, and you can hear the person speak long after they're gone.
Wow. What a great tool. I mean, this is where it keeps going. It doesn't seem to have any end of imagination for so many people.
Well, we're actually kind of probably at this point limited only by our imaginations.
Yeah. Well, tell us some more stories about some of the recoveries you've had as a result of your technology.
Well, you know, every week brings a new story. I think of just this week, just before coming out to Roots Tech, we had a gentleman who passed away, and a group of folks got together to have a memorial service for him. And his life was literally in a shoebox of photographs. And they brought him into us and they said, is there anything we could do? And we said, sure, we can digitize these and make them available. And we did it for him and we put them together. They put together a beautiful memorial service and had some of his friends and whatever relatives were available for him. And it just kind of warms your heart that now this person who isn't here with us anymore here on Earth sort of has an opportunity to live on.
That's right. And I would imagine the relatives could all get a copy of that disc and the presentation.
They did. In fact, we made multiple copies so that everybody had a copy, and it was kind of our gift to them.
Could you see the day where a funeral notice has a disc attached to it? Where they hand those out to everybody? Does that seem unreasonable?
No, absolutely not. In fact, it's now with the technologies, with the photo books and this type of thing, it's not unusual for them to actually be able to hand them a memorial book.
Unbelievable. Great stuff. Guys, it is a pleasure to have you here. And thanks so much for dropping by. And, you know, we've got to plan a scanning party.
Hey,
somewhere
let's do
down
it.
The line,
actually, let's do a bunch of them around the country.
That sounds like a great plan. We will make plans for it. We'll be in touch. They're from Easy Photo Scan. It's Rick Lippert and Chris Hart. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, let's get to
Thank
digital.
You.
And while we're in the preservation mode, our preservation authority, Tom Perry from TMC Place is coming up next. A little Q&A. Listeners' questions he's going to answer for you next on Extreme Genes Family History Radio and ExtremeGenes.com. And welcome back to Extreme Genes Family History Radio. And we've been talking a lot about preservation today. And, of course, in pops our preservation authority, Tom Perry from TMCPlace.com. It was great to meet these guys, Rick
They're
and
awesome.
Chris, a few moments ago. And I know you work with them closely, and you're all on the same page about preservation.
Absolutely.
And we actually have some questions that have been sent in to the website. Question number one from, it looks like, Lisa Newman. She said, I have a DVD of our son's wedding and wondered if we can capture photos from it. Their photographer disappointed them, and I thought this might be a way to obtain some photos for them. Possible?
Oh, yeah, it's possible. In fact, with today's new technology, it makes it even better. In the old days, we had to go and convert the video. You know, it's made up of lines, like an old television. If you took a picture of the screen, you get lines and stuff. Nowadays, what you can do is get your DVD, put it in a Blu-ray player, even if it's only a DVD, because it's going to up-convert it, make a better resolution, which we'll get to even more, and play it on your LED or your plasma television, set up a tripod, put your digital camera on the tripod, set the screen so it's not like what they call cantilevered, so it's all the corners are square, and hit pause when you get to the picture you want and shoot it with your digital camcorder. No
really?
Lines, no nothing. It's absolutely beautiful.
Wow, that is, I would have never thought to do that.
Oh, yeah, it's very simple to do. And if you don't want to deal with it, send it in to us and we'll do that. Just tell us where the frame is. If it's 1 minute and 13 seconds or whatever, then we can take the picture for you. Or, you know, it's a DIY project if you want to do it yourself.
All right, we've got another question from Florida. Ryan Perkins writes, my great grandmother delivered a portion of her life story around 1967 on a reel to reel audio tape. The tape is intact. However, the player is not. Can you download from a tape that is that old?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we did some of these for you in the past, like your Paul McCartney tape. We can take reel-to-reel, the standard quarter inch, whether it's one track, two track, or four track, send it in to us, and we can transfer it to either a CD or MP3s or both, whichever you want. And if the tape's really old and it breaks, we can edit it also. We can go in and edit it. We can enhance it. We can fix splices. So even if it's in poor condition, don't worry about it. Sometimes you'll get old tapes that are actually flaking. Put it in a Ziploc bag, get the air out of it, send it off to us, and we can do a process that's called baking. We actually physically bake your tape, and it makes the...
What?
Oh, yeah, we actually bake it. You know, shake and bake. We actually bake the tape, and it gets the particles to re-adhere to the polyester that the tape's made out of, and then we can transfer it, and it just sounds beautiful.
And there are old tapes that also go in both directions that I have.
Exactly.
Are those recoverable as well?
Absolutely. We can go up to four tracks. So basically, if you're looking at stereo, a stereo tape would be there's two tracks, but they're both going the same direction. One's
right.
playing in the right ear, one's playing in the left ear.
Sure.
Well, sometimes what they do is they record mono. They record the right track going one direction, then the left track coming back.
Yes.
And so if we have those, we can do that as well. If you have ones that have four track, as long as it's still quarter-inch tape, we can transfer all four tracks individually as well.
Boy, it gets complicated, though, when you get back, and some of that technology is so ancient at this point.
Oh, it is. We've got several players. In fact, we had one at Roots Tech to show off to people that, you know, had never seen one before, especially on Saturday. They had this big kids thing at Roots Tech. And it was cool for them to see what a reel-to-reel track machine looked like, what wire recorders looked like, and it was really interesting.
We've answered a couple of them last segment, and we have another one here from Nancy Lincoln. She asks, we're interested in having some regular 8mm and some Super 8 home movies transferred and would like to know if you can do that sort of work and how much a foot would a typical dealer charge?
Okay, that's a really good question. We've talked about this a little bit in the past. Let me go into a little bit more detail on it. Whenever you're transferring film, whether you send it to us or you have a local person do it or whoever you choose, there's some very specific questions you want to ask. You want to ask if they're truly doing it in high definition, if they're doing true high def, or they're doing an up convert to high def, if they're actually physically scanning the film, or if they're projecting the film and then shooting it.
Wow, this gets complicated. Now, go through each option here.
So what you want to do when you talk to somebody, say, do you scan my film in high def? And if they say yes, then say, do you do it at 1080p, 16:9? If they don't answer yes to all those questions, you don't want to choose them. You want to go to somebody that does. And the best way to prove if somebody is indeed scanning, tell them that you want JPEGs of every frame of film so you can make prints later on.
Right, of each picture. And I love that. And as we've talked about, you've done that for me. And you get photographs out of that that you could never capture or find anywhere else because each frame is a picture.
Absolutely. And it's a good quality picture. It's not like something that you've set and scanned that has lines or something through it. It's absolutely incredible, the 1080p 16:9. So you want to make sure they do that. If for some reason you don't want photographs, you still want to ask them and tell them that you do want that. Because if they say, oh, yeah, we can do it, and then you don't want it, that's fine. But ask them, tell them that you do want that. And if they say, no, we can't do that, they're not truly scanning your film. So make sure you request true 1080p 16:9, nothing that's upscanned. And also, if you're a professional editor, you want to make sure they can do it in a RAW format where they actually go edge to edge on the film, which means you'll actually see the hole that's in the film, the little sprocket holes. So if Aunt Mary's kind of below the hole, you can still get her. And make sure if you have any questions, just send a question to asktom@tmcplace.com, and we'll give you a $25 credit on our online shop at tmcplace.com. Send us a question, we'll read it, and you'll get a $25 credit.
All right, great service. What else do you have for us today?
Okay, real quickly, a lot of people have come into the store and called us and say, do I really want to transfer to DVD? Technology is changing so fast, I don't want to get stuck with a format that's going to be out of date
right.
5 years from now.
Of course.
So basically, it's not like the old days when they had Betamax, when they had VHS, VHSC, Video 8, Mini DV, all these different formats that were totally foreign to each other. Now, the people have got really, really smart. DVDs are backwards convertible. Blu-rays are backwards convertible. So basically, go and buy a Blu-ray player. It will play your Blu-rays. It will play your DVDs better than your DVD player. Plus, it also play your CDs. So don't worry about getting old technology. DVDs will be around for a long time. And even if they go away in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, which I doubt, the new thing that replaces them will be back convertible that will play everything that came before it. So don't wait. Go and buy yourself a good Blu-ray player and get it hooked up to your television. Don't wait.
Well, you know, you really can't worry about what's going to happen down the line. It's going to be in somebody else's hands eventually.
Exactly. And with everything being backwards compatible, you don't have to worry about any other problems like you did in the old tape days. One thing, even if you don't have a new high-definition television, go ahead and buy a Blu-ray player. Make sure you get one that has the connectors that are yellow, red, and white, because you can hook those up to your current TV. And then when you can afford a big screen, you've already got your Blu-ray player that's going to play your DVDs better. And then once you get your widescreen television, just buy an HDMI cable, plug it in your Blu-ray, and you're ready, set to go.
All right. Great advice, Tom. Great to have you again. Thanks for joining us. We are done. Have a great week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.
This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Share your family story by going to FamilySearch.org.